Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of the Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had a fun and interesting couple of weeks. Oh my goodness, I can't really see what's on the screen. A fun and interesting couple of weeks, and you haven't been too violently hot. So hello, everybody. So cheers, Catherine, and cheers, Lipton, and cheers, Paul, cheers. I can't work out how to get it. It's actually started. There's some kind of technical problem going on here. Oh, here we are. Cheers, resident poet, and cheers, whoever else. Cheers, Delta Trotska 125. Cheers, everybody. And Hogan Gulligan and Capis and Saludo and Proust and Prost and all that stuff. Yes, and Yaki Dar. And all that stuff. Yes. Hello, hello, hello. And I wish I could get this. There's some kind of problem with the stream, with the chat. I can't see them for me. Welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, online public house. Meets on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, which discuss base science, stuff going on in the news, and psychology, and all kinds of malarkey. Stuff that cheers, Tommy, Hurligan, Gurligan, Capis, Saludo, Slanger, and Slangevar. And welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Now, I've been in London, as you know, chaps, as I met Lipton in London, and he was wearing a coat, even though it was like 37 degrees. I met Catherine in London, and she was quite hot as well. And I have been absolutely amazed by the absolute state of Britain. And you've got leftist people like that Alibi Brown harridan, saying that it's terribly selfish for people to get air conditioning and we shouldn't get air conditioning and that India copes with air conditioning, which is really failing to understand that people in India are evolved to this. And it's the collapse of normal society, the collapse of everything. Trains not working. Restaurants, all the restaurants in the suburb where my parents live, shut down, all of them, saying it's too hot to work. Underground, unusable. I can't believe that a civilized country can get into such a state over a bit of heat. And there must be more to it than they're letting on. That's my view. What do you think, Catherine?
Catherine.
Well, I mean, the first of the sort of climate crap. Look, it snowed twice on my birthday on the 22nd of April. Twice, and it's been 38 in June, July, twice in my life, 1976. And so these are normal weather cycles. I mean, I've lived in loads and loads of hot places, Singapore, Jamaica, Vietnam, everywhere, and everybody just gets on with it. I mean, the crazy thing about air conditioning is that I wouldn't put it in because it's such a waste of money, because you're only going to need it for about 7 days in 50 years that it might get too hot. But the other interesting thing about actually smaller heat pumps, of course, smaller heat pumps are just air conditioning units reversed. So if you've got some of the heat pumps, you can just switch the switch and reverse the way that the heat pump is moving the air. I mean, heat pumps are air conditioning systems. It's just which way you're moving hot to cold or cold to hot.
Yes, but why don't we I don't understand what people have had long enough. So Tommy was saying in the chat that he remembers it being 38 degrees in Luton in the 2000s. I'm not sure that's true, Tommy, because they're saying that the record temperature is 37.6 degrees and it was achieved in Gosport. But anyway, you remember it being very, very hot. And I remember it being very, very hot in the early 2000s. And I don't remember all of these problems. I don't. I'm sure there weren't all of these problems. There wasn't just the collapse of everything and the inability to deal with it. Somehow we coped, and now we can't cope. And I'm fascinated to know what on earth it is. I mean, if India can cope with trains in hot weather, why can't Britain? Why didn't they put in the 2003 resident poet saying it's very hot? I cannot understand why they've had years to do this and nothing gets done. And nothing will get done, not to change it. So that we just, if Spain can do it, I don't see why we can't. Lipton.
I live in a hot country. Jamaica is hot all the time. So when I was in London and people were complaining that the heat was too much, I couldn't appreciate what they were trying to say. Trains were not working. People were frantic. I live in a hot country. It's hot all the time. I just can't understand why are people so infuriated because of a little heat.
Well, they just don't. They have. They won't invest the money enough into it to sort it out. I think it's got better though. I mean, there was last time there was. Did I go out there? Was that me whose internet just went out there? Mine.
I thought you'd had a stroke from the heat.
Oh my God! Okay, something's going on with the internet in Finland. I was wrong, chaps. I was wrong. It's not all better here. Something is definitely.
Well, it can't be hot enough. The internet is packing up.
It must be something. It's only like 18 degrees here, but I can't, and that's hot here. But I can't understand what's. So it's very slow. The chat is moving very slowly, and it's like everyone's had a stroke. I might have to unplug it and plug it in again. But no, it does seem absolutely extraordinary. We'll come back to that later. So let's.
Can I make a quick point about the heat, though, Ed? I seem to remember. Forgive the anecdotal, but you know Main Road where Man City used to play. They switched their ground and they knocked down Main Road and built a load of high-intensity housing. And because they were so obsessed with the insulation for winter, there's no proper ventilation for summer because the thickos didn't realise you have a winter, but you also have summer. So one of the issues about not being able to handle the heat is the absolute stupidity of town planners and architects. How can you not make provision for hot weather? And they haven't, because they're so obsessed about net zero and insulating everything to the nth degree. Well, guess what? Drafty buildings are nicer in the summer.
Yeah, well, the way our friend who we've met, Binks, put it in a tweet she did was to say that, look, I don't care. I don't care what's causing this. I don't care whether the cause is man-made or whether the cause is sunspots or whatever the cause is. The point is that we've had years to get used to this and we accept it. And the climate's increasing and we need to do something about it. And it should be done. It should be done. It should be rolled out. But nothing gets done. I couldn't believe it. Ark, 200 people didn't turn up to a dinner for 300 people. There was this dinner, and 200 people didn't turn up. At 300.
Weren't you one of them, Ed?
I was one of them. Yeah, for this banquet.
Yes, because I was one of the people who did turn up, and you weren't right there.
No, well, I wasn't.
Maybe it was because they were serving sushi without ice.
It was the kind of thing they do. It was ridiculous. You had to go on the central line in central London, which is the worst possible line. It's not air conditioned. It's hell. And everybody thought, just no, this is no good. And in a civilized country, like when I first went on the underground in Barcelona in 1994, I was amazed. It's air conditioned. And not just air conditioned. It was playing classical music as well on the trains. It was that civilized. It's classical music playing on the trains. Air conditioned. Can you imagine anything like that in the UK? So what are you going to say, Lipton?
I was about to tell Paul that he did not miss much by not going to ARC.
No, I don't think I'm going to go a fourth year. I get the general idea. It's the same people. It's the same warmed up.
No, let me tell you. I like the people in the audience. I met interesting people in the audience, and I like those people, and I wanted to speak to a few of the economists, and I spoke to them, but beyond that, it wasn't very good. Like, I like Tyler Cohen, and I was speaking to Tyler, and that was okay, and I met Philip Magnus again, but most of the speakers weren't really good.
No, they weren't. They were rubbish. They were just saying cliche. Catherine,
yes.
Do all your audience know what ARC is? Because it is quite a political speciality. I mean, it's not as big as CPAC.
It's the Alliance for Responsible Citizenship, chaps. And three of us on this panel went there. Paul wasn't allowed to go because he's too based.
And basically, Rupert Lowe wasn't there. And it's funded by, who's that guy who funds GB News and Nigel Farage?
Paul.
As well?
His name is Paul.
Paul, yes. So basically, it's funded, it's free speech for nice people.
essentially.
The mood of the audience was excellent. People in the audience, they made some rather interesting points, which I might not repeat them in this segment of the podcast, but some people in the audience from Israel made some interesting points.
Lipton, could I quickly ask you, Lipton, how many epileptic people you've killed in your podcasting career?
How many what?
Epileptic people you've inadvertently killed in your podcasting
epileptic
career.
Well, not, I have not killed any.
I think you have, with all these strobing effects.
People are autistically complaining about the light, Lipton, it has to be said. If you could do something about it, that would be much appreciated. Okay, right, let's move on then to Citizen Vigilante, which is what I... So I've watched about half of it. Kath, have you watched any of Citizen Vigilante?
No, just seen about it on Twitter, but haven't watched any of it.
And right, so I'll start off then, and then I'll move to Paul. So what I thought was this. I quite like the idea, but what it reminded me of, I don't know if any of you remember, chaps, some years ago, there was this movie about the rapture. So it was a based movie in the sense that it was about the rapture and how, like, all the good people get to go to heaven and their clothes are left behind and lying there on the floor, right? And then the bad people go to hell. And the bad people are, of course, the left-wing people and the liberal people and the non-Christian people and the people that have sex before marriage and whatever, right? But one of the problems with it was is because it wasn't a mainstream movie, the quality of acting was just not very good. And so I had to sort of grit my teeth and sit through this. And apparently, I'm told that the guy that wrote the novel that this was about was so unhappy, was deeply unhappy about what had been produced. But of course, what are you going to expect? No mainstream actor is going to go in a film like that. And that seemed to be, I've only watched about half of it. I've got to the bit where he's having sex with that Thai girl. But I can't get over that. The quality of the acting was abysmal. But anyway, Paul.
Yeah, I must have seen about four or five quite long segments, but I think I get the gist of it, but I wouldn't claim to be an expert on it. It's slightly odd acting. I know he's an established actor, but if you're going to talk about acting, I don't know whether he's trying to be deliberately full of ennui or something, but it's quite a deadpan delivery, which I found slightly odd. But I also found it interesting. I've always said that artists capture the zeitgeist normally ahead of time, but this seems to be almost post hoc. They've captured what people are feeling. And if nothing else, I think it's going to have a hugely cathartic effect. And also, isn't there a British crowd-funded film that's supposed to be dealing with the grooming gangs? I've seen pilots for that. I was just wondering whether that... did I imagine that? Or I'm sure I saw it somewhere. But generally, I just found the little segments, it's what everyone feels viscerally is so unfair about what goes on in the UK. And to see it on screen, I just found quite interesting.
It was. There was a cathartic element to it, to actually watch a film that's not inculcating me with woke stuff, that's a newish film, is rare. It's rare. Normally, I'm being got at in some very, very subtle way. Or not even subtle. I'm just being got at. There's something there. You know, there's the wise black judge. Or there's the criminality, but it's of course a white guy that's the criminal and a foreigner who's the victim or something. So it was really strange to not be got at. But maybe they've realised that people don't want to be got at. When they are got at, like 10 years ago, whatever it was, that Ghostbusters female movie.
I don't watch TV.
It's not TV, Lipton, it's online. Mm. But they're not be got at. Like for the sake on the plane yesterday from Helsinki, I watched a film called The Handmaid, I think it was called, with Paul's favourite Sydney Sweeney. Mm-hmm. Right? And there are nude scenes. There are, right?
Hello.
And again, I wasn't got at. I don't recall there being any stuff in it that was kind of getting at me, except possibly that the Hispanic gardener is the kind of semi-rescuer of the situation.
So can I just clarify, Ed, sorry to interrupt you, but you were watching a film with Sydney Sweeney in and you were following the plot.
I was, yeah. The plot was very.
I applaud your self-control.
She's a criminal. She's on probation. And she gets out of prison. And she has to get this job and working as a housemaid for this rich family called the Winchesters, and the mother's mental and has like schizophrenia or something, and father's obviously. But anyway, and it all sort of develops from there. I won't ruin it. But it was interesting to experience that, a modern film where you're not being got at and where it's kind of realistic. So at the very beginning, there's this mother that is just stabbed in the neck by a random immigrant. and that's where it develops from. And I was surprised that it was catharsis. It's what people know is happening, and it's playing back to them kind of what life is like, which is what I think films should do. And then they're realistic, and then people like them. Yes,
I read an interesting film in the Washington Post yesterday. I would love to share this story with our lovely audience. Why black? It's a story about four educated black women in America who are struggling to get a job. Four women, 9 degrees between them, and not a steady paycheck. That's the title, or rather the statement that's being promoted. So I read the story and the comments, and it was hilarious. These women lack STEM degrees. None of them had degrees in STEM. Most of them were bureaucrats. Their jobs did not require any specific expertise, but they felt that they deserved better. And the commenters were just awesome. People were saying, those women should lose weight. It's not really funny.
Yes, but will that inspire a revolution, Lipton? Will people be frightened of that?
No, it won't inspire a revolution, but the comments were good. People were saying, no, these ladies should go and sit down. Really funny comments.
Fair enough. But no, I think that you would see more films like this. I mean, we need to see. I mean, Catherine, your area is animal rights, of course. We should...
No, I'm not really an animal rights person at all. I'm a anti-Islamic person. I mean, are you talking about the halal stuff that I've
just... Yeah, the halal, yeah.
Well, I mean, I basically got involved with that. I mean, I don't like animal cruelty. I mean, have no doubt about it. But I think most slaughterhouses are pretty dreadful. And halal is even worse. But the main motivation for it is that I don't like the Islamification of Britain. And even if it was no animal rights issues whatsoever, halal is a big problem because it's against many other, well, a lot of other religions, Hinduism, Sikhism, traditional Christianity. And it is one small group imposing their will on everybody else.
Yes,
but Catherine, why are they able to impose their will? I went to America some time ago, and when I was being served lunch, the meat was always halal, even though Muslims were not present at that event. So they're not imposing their wills. People fear them for whatever reason.
They make a bigger fuss and complain like crazy. I mean, I know people who've been on school boards, and they just go on and on and on and on. And most people bow down to it. Exactly. And it's part of the whole woke agenda as well. I mean, there's one particular school that's been in the news recently, which is in Essex, which has one Muslim child out of 300. It's serving all halal without telling all the rest of the parents. I mean, we've found this quite a few times. And that's the headmaster doing that. That's a woke headmaster who is happy to do that.
Yes, Catherine Birbal Singh imposed vegetarian food on her Michaela Academy so that she could avoid the fuss over halal meat and basically please the intransigent minority who would moan about halal meat. And so to get round there being any kind of, set for, different kinds of food for different people, she just said, okay, we're just going to have vegetarian food. And I think that's unacceptable. And once they start arguing, but like my primary school, there were a few Muslims, and there would have been no question in those days of halal meat or changing the menu just to make them feel better from pork or whatever to something else.
They can eat halal at home. Look, some Christians do not eat pork. Some people are vegetarians. We don't cater to the preferences of other groups as passionately as, well, let me not say we because I'm not included. But society will not cater to the preferences of other groups as passionately as we do for Muslims.
No, well, I don't, as you know, I don't eat nuts for religious reasons. But I don't go on and on about people.
Is that because of Leviticus, Ed?
Yes. I know it's because, you know, that friend of mine died of a peanut allergy.
I didn't.
And so since then, I haven't eaten nut.
You've never given anyone nuts since?
No. And since then, at Ark, right, they had this sort of, trifle or something, with peanuts in. And I realised as I was eating it, there were peanuts in it. And I'd eaten some of them. Did I go mad? No, I just carefully avoided
the
eating
pastries. At Ark were horrible, Ada. The pastries. Horrible pastries.
Yeah, we can't talk about
that. So, Ed, can I just clarify? You're a non-allergic objector to nuts in food.
Yes, that's correct.
So that's like the worst type of woke. That's beyond woke. You haven't even got a medical reason. You just want to be awkward.
I just don't like nuts can kill this person I knew.
No, but
right?
You're the scientist. I'm sure they did a load of studies whereby withholding nuts from young children, which everyone did in a big moral panic and social contagion, actually leads to the likelihood of more peanut allergies later in life.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't give nuts to young children. I'm just saying that I would prefer not to have to eat nuts.
And peanuts are, by the way, not a nut.
They're a legume, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, fine. I make certain exceptions to my rule, though, because I've no problem with the purple thing in Equality Street. That one, I like that one.
Do you know what went wrong with civilization, Ed? When the purple chocolate in Quality Street became available on its own, that is a sign of a decadent society that won't defer its satisfaction, has to have everything all at once.
Well, that may be the case. And I was in this antique shop recently and I saw this massive tin of Quality Street. So this tin that they had, it was from the 60s or something. Absolutely huge. God knows how much it cost in relation to income in those days, a tin of Quality Street. But anyway, look, we've moved off the topic a little bit, which was something else. So it's the intransigent minority. And so you have both an intransigent minority and there's enough of them that they can kick up a fuss. And we are prepared to just back down before them and do whatever they like. And so as a consequence, everybody has to not eat pork, or everybody has to eat halal slaughtered food, or indeed everybody has to be vegetarian. And I just think it's the fight back, the assertion that we've become too kind and we shouldn't do this. Like another thing that I wanted to mention, they're thinking of changing the law with regard to rough sleeping. I think this is a terrible idea. You heard about this? At the moment, I couldn't believe it when I was making my way to my Jolly Heretic event in where was it we were, Lipton, that road that were near Euston Station. And there was just a guy that had put up one of these collapsible tents that you don't have to pitch
in the
street, and had used a bollard or something to hold it down. And I would have thought, that's absolutely, you know, you can't just live in the street.
And when you want to go to Brighton now or some festival, or you want to go to the art conference, we can just bring our tents and stick them all up in Hyde Park or right outside the art conference. Just put them on the street outside. I mean, the crazy thing about the whole rule as well is that if you sleep in your car or you are sleeping in a camper van on the side of the road, you can still be moved on, or you're committing some sorts of offences. But if you've got a tent and just stick it up, you're not.
So this is going to make going anywhere in the summer in London a lot cheaper.
Ed, I was in London and I noticed that some men, they seemed a bit unstable. They were enjoying themselves. It was late at night. They were obviously homeless men. But England is a welfare state. If people are homeless, why not give them a home, since it's a welfare state? Why allow them to pollute the environment? It's like a third world country, like somewhere in Jamaica.
There's actually a lot of people who cannot. I mean, we have this situation where immigrants are coming in and getting houses, but there are actually quite a lot of people, and I know because I have rooms and I have had people who, I mean, they're mostly white British and they're older, who literally are homeless, who are sleeping in their cars, or they can't get themselves an address, so they end up outside the system. So we at the same time as having this enormous welfare state, you know, 53% of the population is claiming some type of benefit, we have a vast number of other people who effectively can't get onto housing. So they literally, they either don't have a deposit, they don't have the references, they can't access, and they just get turned away from council offices.
So the only solution is for them to become a refugee and then to be given immediately.
And especially if you're working and homeless. So there was a woman I know who was working for like Leonard Cheshire Homes on minimum wage, middle of winter. It was, and she had basically been asked to move and couldn't find anywhere and was sleeping in her car in the middle of winter.
Isn't it also the case that if you're applying for social housing, if you have any friend network or family network, you go to the back of the queue, which is a perverse incentive because it means anyone with actual community ties to the country is put at a disadvantage. And if you're a genuine person with no ties to the country, you're given preferential treatment. That can't be right.
No. I mean, it seems to me that it would be in people's interests to just make their way to Dover or somewhere, go in the sea, and then just turn up and make out that they can't speak English, and just sort of work it from there. And how could they prove otherwise? I mean, are they allowed to give them genetic tests to work out where they're from? I don't suppose they are they? So that would be the simplest solution. Just learn a very basic amount of Tigray or some obscure language. I'm sure you can do that very easily online. And then just turn up and insist that you are a sort of semi-albino from whatever country it is you happen to be from. How can they question it? They can't question it. And then you go to the front of the housing queue. Whereas if you're actually from Britain you're actually British, then you don't. You go straight to the back. It seems to me it's so perverse that this is going back to that film, Paul, the Citizen Vigilante. It's what everyone wants, and it's what will happen eventually, I suppose, if people don't feel that justice can be served. They'll have no option but to turn to vigilante groups, and they will turn to them. And if the police is increasingly chaotic, then how can they do anything about them eventually? I mean, even I discovered, you know, that woman that was punched in the face at Manchester Airport?
Yes, that lady.
Yeah, it turns out she was 5'2". So...
But she exactly also went on. She went on the record saying people were laughing when her nose was broken or whatever. And I warned of this: the complete withdrawal of public support for the police, which they're now complaining about. Mm. And yet, the whole public has witnessed the downgrading of everybody else's rights, and poor Henry Novak, etc.
No, exactly. There's no trust for the police. There's no reason to trust the police. They're not on our side. We know that. And so the only thing you can do eventually is end up in the situation where there are vigilantes who you go to in a position of problem, and then you pay them, of course, and then we have a separate...
We already have that in certain areas. I mean, if you're in rural areas, we have gypsy groups who will go and do stuff. I mean, that exists. That's always existed. If you're in the, you know, that they will go and park them. So you've got some dispute, they'll go and sort it out. I mean, it's happened in North Ireland as well, where you've got.
I was going to say, Catherine, that's also happened in any old fashioned, so to speak, council estate with strong social ties. There's always been enforcers who basically, you know, you don't cross them and they make sure vulnerable people are looked after. And that's all been replaced over the years by increasingly ineffectual police. And guess what? It's chaos.
Well, it's another issue, which is that the small claims court can take up to 3 years to get a hearing. And then you cannot enforce the judgment, even if you get the judgment after the 2 or 3 years. And, you know, you're talking about £2,000 or £3,000 for somebody who wrecked your house, who's got no assets. You can't enforce the judgment. I was looking at this because I've got a judgment against somebody for £1,500. And if I was going to get a claim against this woman, and by the way, she had 5 rabbits who weed all over everything. And this is the second or third time she'd done this. But I would get something like £3.30 a week from her if I got an attachment to Social Security. £3.30 a week, and the cost of getting that would be another £200.
So the only solution then, Catherine, what is to pay someone to break her legs?
I'm not. Most people just throw the county court judgments in the bin, but that's what you've got, is this system with no. It's not just the police. There's no justice thereafter because people can't. It's just pointless. This is why we've got this problem with electricity and utilities, where a third of people are not paying their bill. And this is because the small claims courts are completely jammed up, and it costs the utility companies are basically not taking people to court. And some people know this. So we've got two types of the electricity companies, and the numbers are just staggering. We've got about, of the third, half won't pay, but they've got a bill. And then we've got this new phenomena, which is a sort of electricity utility hopping. I think I might have mentioned it before, maybe not on this program, but where you go into a house and you don't give them your name. And so you just keep using the electricity and gas for, and they don't take you to court, and they can't cut you off because utilities are sort of a socialized public service. And then you leave that after a year and you go to another place and you do the same thing again. Or you just write some other name, like you just say, oh, my name's Fatima Khan. Well, how many Fatima Khans are there in this country? Millions. And so they can't identify, because when you go to a new house, they don't ask for anything. They don't ask for deposits. They don't ask for ID of who this person is. So, it's a massive problem that nobody's talking about that either. That's a part of
just to add to the mix, Catherine, it may sound tangential, but I've read recent articles about the civil service, the number of people working not in the office from home. They hide it behind the fact that they say they have full occupancy in the office, but they have many fewer desks than they actually have staff. So they claim the office is full. So that's a bit of a scam. You've also got HMRC recently has been found basically to be inept and has made loads of errors. So you can keep pointing. I've done this so many weeks in a row that you can keep pointing to every major institution, every major organisation that has this catastrophic lack of managerial competence. And guess what? The country is just falling apart because of it.
I had no idea that that was going on in the UK with regard to utilities.
Yeah, and we've got another thing. We've got actually a phenomenon now which is going, well, in monetary terms, we lose more in electricity than South Africa is, because our electricity is much higher and people use more. But South Africa, it's well known that nobody pays electricity bills and they just steal the electricity. Well, we're losing the same amount as South Africa. And we've got another phenomenon, which is people tapping into gas and electricity via various ways. And I believe we have one person a day die while they're attempting to tap into somebody else's electricity.
So there is some Darwinian retribution.
I heard about this when I was in Mexico. If you've ever been there, but it's one of the immediate things you notice is how many obviously illegal electricity lines there are, tapping into other telegraph poles, tapping into other people's electricity. And there was a doctor I was speaking to there, and he was saying, like, every week there's somebody that comes in with a badly burned hand or something like that, and they won't.
But the real issue is the woke legislation, because. That's a smaller phenomenon, but the fact that these people not being taken to court, the lady with the rabbits who owes me £1,500 owes thousands and thousands and thousands to every utility over the last 5 years, and I don't think she's ever paid a utility bill in 5 years, and she just moves. And so these accumulations, and then they give her offers to pay half and whatever, and then they just write it off. And what was extraordinary about this woman, until I took her to court, she had £10,000 of utility bills and she had no CCJs against her name. And that shows you how bad it is. So, I mean, these bills, we're not just paying for the green, we're paying for this third of people not paying their bills. And simple legislation, cuts you off. You've got no electricity, it will go off at 6 o'clock tonight, that's it. They'll get
human
paid.
Rights.
But that happened to me in Finland. I moved into a new flat years ago, and there was some confusion or whatever, and there was this brief period where the electricity went off, and I had to ring up an electricity company Finland is efficient, so within hours the electricity was back on, But we didn't realise that the electricity wasn't included in what we paid or whatever. And so we just got the electricity and that was that. But there was a period of a couple of hours where we had no electricity. Fortunately, it was summer, so it wasn't really a problem in Finland.
Yeah, I mean, the simple way to solve this is with card meters. And there are some places that have card meters. But then there's all the administrative cost of the card meters. And then the electricity companies, gas, they tried to raise the rate. And, of course, that's against human rights to force a card meter on somebody. Because when the card meter runs out, you know, when people used to put the coins in the gas meter, it would go off. But that doesn't seem to be happening either. I mean, I think the whole utility sector is just a disaster. That's without the water. We're running out of water in one of the wettest countries in Europe. And that's obviously because we've got raw sewage floating down Kingsbridge High Street into the Salcombe Estuary because the sewage system can't work. Well, that's because we've got like so many extra people. We don't know how many people we've got.
Also, yeah, Catherine, to be fair, it's also because we have executives who've been paid hundreds of thousands of pounds who can't do their job. And even when they fail, are given bonuses. Unbelievable.
Catherine, you sound like you're describing Jamaica. Jamaica has a serious problem of electricity theft and water theft. Utilities. It has been going on for decades with no end in sight. England is becoming a failed society.
But yes, you can afford a grand piano, Lipton.
You people should be ashamed of yourselves. Really ashamed.
You should. To be fair, Lipton, your country where you come from didn't do very well in terms of when it was Free Kentucky Fried Chicken Day.
Oh, yeah, it does this year. That was a disgrace. Jamaica, Kentucky was celebrating its anniversary, so it had a buy one, get one free. It was giving away free chicken. And the people went ballistic.
People went mad. The Kentucky Fried Chicken shops of Jamaica did not anticipate how popular buy one, get one free would be.
Oh, they love chicken. I mean, it sounds like that the vacuum cleaner. Do you remember when Hoover nearly went bankrupt because they thought that they could give two free air tickets to America if you bought one vacuum cleaner? And they didn't realise that a million people would do it.
No, you can't. You've got to stick by your offer. I've got an offer as a book company based in Cambridge called Icon Books, and they used to do this series of books called Heidegger for Beginners or Sartre for Beginners or whatever. They were cartoon books on intellectual topics, and you got in it a free. Whenever you bought one, you got a little coupon where you could get another one for free if you sent the coupon off.
And do you mean Heidegger?
Or whatever, Heidegger.
Heidegger. That sounds like you're saying hello to an Irish navvy.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if German people pronounce it Heidegger.
I'd be very surprised if they did.
I don't know. I'm just
Heidegger. They're not. German people don't come from California, Ed.
But English people say Mannerheim, and it's not. It's Mannerheim. So I'm thinking that perhaps they would say Heidegger, but I'm happy to say Heidegger.
Could I also just mention, I did mention this on my own channel, but there was a KFC funny story I read where this girl said she went with her sister who's obsessed with KFC because Incontinent Jay from Texas in the comment loves stories about KFC. And she said, isn't it a shame we don't have the lemon flavouring anymore? And she said, what do you mean? And she said, those little lemon sachets. And she said, they were the hand wipes.
yeah, that's when it's a proper Indian meal when they give you those lemon sachets at the end to put on your to put on your leftovers. But I didn't know that. I didn't know that because not living there, I'm not au fait with the terrible state. I mean, my friend in the chat, Tommy, will attest. We pay very little for electricity in this country, and we pay very little for water in this country. Occasionally, when it's very, very cold, then something will come on the TV saying that we're suddenly putting up electricity prices, so switch off all your lights. That happened this winter because there was such
demand. I don't think most people in Britain realise the extent of it. This new 15-20% of what, I don't, they've got a name for it, but you know, they're basically house hoppers, so they never put their name down, and that this is new. I mean, I think found out about it because I'm an avid sort of clawed person, and I see all these bills, I sort of ask questions about why utility bills and not enforcing things. Well, they're
but
not.
But Catherine, don't you think that's one side of the equation? The other side of the equation is it wouldn't be such a bad thing if, or it would be morally completely wrong what they're doing. But it wouldn't even be that bad if we had very low electricity prices, which would be possible if we weren't such a suicidally stupid net zero follower. So they would be robbing the system, but they'd be robbing the system of a lot less, relatively.
Yeah.
Catherine, Andrew Munford has a new paper on coal, and he explains the problems with coal and how best to solve them. He gave a suggestion, and I read it. It's an excellent paper, and I agree with him. Coal can be produced in a way that limits environmental pollution.
Yes, but we're stuck in this hysteria over this whole system that was gradually brought in the 80s, slowly but surely, making us feel guilty for just doing stuff we've been doing for ages.
The climate is always changing.
Right, Lionel Shriver reckons that she said in an interview with me that it's just a new kind of idea of mankind having an original sin and being in control of everything. We think we're in control of it. We think we can influence the gods. We always have. Oh, what can we do? There's a problem. Oh, let's make a sacrifice to the gods, and the problem will go away. And that's what all this environmentalist crap is. There's a problem. We don't really want to admit what it is. We don't want to admit we can't do anything about it. We're too arrogant to admit.
Yeah, but Ed, it's worse than that. I'm trying to think of an appropriate analogy, but it's like one society sacrifices innocent people to the gods, hoping things will be better, whilst watching other societies do better while they make no sacrifices whatsoever. So that would be a more, you know, comparable situation. So India, China, America, all these countries, even Australia's a huge user of energy because of its climate.
Sorry, cat is making a lot of noise. Carry on.
So what the UK does is absolutely irrelevant. It really is. So how narcissistic do you have to be to think, all right, I think Miliband's argument is we might set an example. Yeah, because the Chinese are really going to follow us. It's just beyond, you know, it's ridiculous.
Emissions emanate from the developing world.
Yeah,
What about the developing world, Lipton?
I said most emissions emanate from the developing world.
China, India, it makes all, I think it's less than 1% of global emissions is the UK responsible.
But even if you look at the rest of Europe, our electricity, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but they're just extraordinary. Compared, as you said, in Finland, even France, whereas we're paying 25, 26 and continuing standing charges, you know, most of Europe is sort of like half that.
But have you read the madness of the system whereby renewable energy in Scotland, when it overproduces because our electrical grid can't handle it, it's going to be exported to France and we're going to pay the French to take it? So all this green energy, it's so useless that even when it works, we then have to pay for the privilege of not using it.
It's
beyond, you can't get your head around how ridiculous it is.
Well, one of the things that sticks out to me that I don't see so much in Finland, but again, it could be because I'm a foreigner and I'm not seeing the nuances, but I don't think it is. It's just how stupid so many people are in the UK. And I can listen to people's conversations. Like I was listening when I was at the airport yesterday to a very stupid conversation, very, very stupid Finn was saying very stupid, trite things like, oh, yeah, well, it's raining in Helsinki, so that might make the plane late. And things like this is what he's saying. And his friend was like, oh, yeah, could be. Or, I don't know, maybe the pilot's drunk. That's a stupid conversation they were having in dire. I'm talking. I'm finishing my point. A stupid conversation they were having in dialect Finnish. But even this didn't sound as stupid as the kind of conversations I've heard like police officers have in the UK. Yes, Lipton?
I think you should do a new study on IQ in the United Kingdom, not just England, but all of the United Kingdom. There are so many problems with the UK. I've met really brilliant people in the UK, but the intellectual landscape has three different levels. The first level is really smart, and then the middle and the bottom are garbage.
Yes, this is what the middle. I agree with you, and therefore the bottom are absolute garbage. Yeah,
garbage.
And
aren't worse. Most countries like that, really?
Yeah, most countries are like that, but we expect better from the UK. We didn't expect it to be this bad. Like, it's just too average.
Well, I think there's a kind of Flynn effect in there's we're getting genetically less intelligent, but as we get genetically less intelligent, then people like the people that are running the society get less intelligent, and then they create a society that brings us to our intellectual phenotypic maximum to a lesser extent. And you can see that with TV programs. If you compare like documentaries from the 70s, that basically their idea is like Clark, whatever his name was, Kenneth Clark. Right. It's aimed. The assumption is the average person is watching this, watching telly, and it's to educate them and bring them up. Now we just sort of speak down to them, and I don't watch TV much. My parents do because they're boomers, and the utter tripe that they have on television in the UK, it was just shocking. Even watching the news, I was thinking that this is aimed at people with a sort of 90 IQ or something. It's utterly stupid. And so then this means they don't reach their phenotypic maximum, so they become more stupid. And we'll carry on with this after the break. But we're in the middle now, so hello, those of you new, hello, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We're, of course, online public house, which meets on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We discuss based science and stuff in the news and psychology and information is increasingly expanded from our woke joke universities. If you are new, would you do me a favour? Would you please subscribe? Could you subscribe on YouTube? Could you leave a like for the algorithm? Could you leave a thumbs up and a comment and all that malarkey? And also subscribe to my Substack. That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most based interviews that I can't put on YouTube. I put interviews with all kinds of fascinating people like Catherine, where I put in-person interviews, vlogs, blogs, films I make, and wherever you like what I do, you talk for the cost of a pint of beer a month. Next to me, we have Catherine Blakelock, who is a well-known politico, should we say, involved in all kinds of political stuff. You have a channel, do you, Catherine? But you're on the old Twitter.
Yeah, I'm just on the old Twitter.
So follow Catherine Blakelock on Twitter. Then below we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. He has a channel, which is Lipton Matthews, and he's also increasingly part of my channel. What happens is that if someone sees me as too controversial to be interviewed by, then I just send Lipton in.
Riff, Edelman, cool.
Exactly, and then they give him an interview straight away.
Does that mean Lipton's your fluffer?
Yeah, he's my understudy, and if there's a problem, if someone says, "Oh no, I can't be interviewed by Ed Dutton," he researches race and stuff. I just say, "Lipton, go and get that person." And unfortunately, Lipton, when I told you to get Kenny Badenoch, you weren't quick enough, were you?
No, I said, "You know, I wasn't quick enough at all.
Go, there's Kemi, there, go." And when I told you to get that guy that wrote that report, you ran up to the wrong black person.
Yes.
A random black man that was asleep.
Lipton, you didn't say they all look the same, did you? That would be outrageous.
No,
what was the guy we wanted, Lipton? What was his name?
Tony Sewell.
Yeah, Tony Sewell walked past. I said, Lipton, go and grab him and interview him. And he said, who? I said, that black man there. And he runs up to a completely different black man who's having a sleep. And wakes him up, and it was disastrous.
A lot of the black people at the event were pastors and prophets.
That's right. Literal prophets. Okay,
exactly.
And finally, we have Dr. Paul Taylor, and his channel is Readers of the Lost Art, where he engages in a sort of misanthropic and grumpy look at novels and that are at least 100 years old. So go over there and have a look at his stuff.
Thanks, Kemi, Ed. You really sold that one.
I think I did. But Kemi used the word spiteful in her Parliament, Lipton. She called Bridget Phillipson spiteful. And I met her advisor, her chief advisor at ARC, and he's a big fan of the Jolly Heretic. So I like to think.
Really?
That the phrase, you met him as well, weren't you there? He was talking to Toby Young. And so I'd like to think that Kemi knows the phrase spiteful mutant, but she thought it was going a bit too far to call Bridget Phillipson a spiteful mutant, so she just called her spiteful. Okay.
You know, sorry, but quickly to add to that, all the people, the Labour people moaning about lack of opportunity, Bridget Phillipson and Burnham and all these people, I think I read somewhere that they all grew up under Thatcher. So they've all achieved. They were claiming they've all come from working class backgrounds. Yes, under Thatcher. So the idea that, and you know, Angela Rayner's mum selling the council house and Bridget Phillipson's mum did as well a thing. So that, you know, they've all pulled themselves up by the bootstraps and the Thatcher sell your own house revolution.
No, indeed, indeed. Absolute and total hypocrisy. Right, we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic, Mr. Quinn, who I saw at the Jolly Heretic event last Monday. And he has written the following poem in light of tonight. Excuse me. When it comes to the subject of weather, reporting is all hell for leather. Yes, it's a scorcher, but unyielding torture, a different thing quite altogether. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn.
Hey.
If you are a fan of Mr. Quinn's Jolly Heretic poetry, which you should be, then you can buy a copy of his book of Jolly Heretic poetry on Amazon, and the link is in the description. And he also has a YouTube channel. Hello, Charlie Pepper. Cheers, sir. I hadn't seen you. Cheers, Charlie Pepper. So please go over and subscribe there. Right, was there anything else? No, right. So we'll carry on then with this. I need to know about this stuff. I need to know about this stuff because not living here, that's the thing. If you live abroad for 21 years, you can get out of touch. And I knew that the utilities were more expensive in the UK, but I had no idea that obviously, as is looked at, of course, Paul, in Citizen Vigilante, when these kids go on a bus and refuse to pay.
I saw that bit, yeah.
Yeah, and he makes the point. If you refuse to pay, then it gets passed on to everybody else.
Oh, did you see the footage in Germany? There's real footage I've seen on YouTube where a woman, obviously German woman, gets checked for her ticket. And in the background are two people from an ethnic minority and the conductor completely ignores them. And then this was followed up. People complained about it and the trade union of the conductors said, we're really sorry this is the situation, but our members are subjected to such violence that it's not in our interests to ask people for tickets who aren't German. So there's two-tier ticketing on German trains.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's not all, I'm just sticking up for the UK, it's not all the UK that's the worst. It is pretty cross Europe now.
No, it's when they lose that sense of cultural confidence and that sense of that we're kind of the best and we're not having this. And I fear that's happening here in Finland already. Because if I go back to when I first came here, there was a portion of the population that the Finns, all countries, if they know what they're doing, have some kind of way of justifying that, oh, we're the best and thinking that we're the best, even if they're objectively not. And with Finns, it's the Winter War and whatever, and the continuation war. And this shift is definitely happening. I'm not allowed to use the forbidden word on here. So, but there was a case about 15 years ago of a policeman. Those shows they have where they fly the war documentary and they film what the police are doing and whatever, right? And there was this case where this guy had been robbed. This guy had been robbed of some of his wallet, and he was telling the police what happened. And he was trying to be polite. And he said, the police said, what did he look like? And he said, well, he had sort of dark skin and curly hair. Right. And the policeman just went in Finnish, which way did the N-word go? Which way did he go? And the guys went, oh, he went over there. Right, we'll go that way then. And that was that. There was no messing about. And no one really commented on that at the time. No one commented on it. It was just sort of accepted that that was a reasonable thing to do. And that was as recently as about 15 years ago. And now I don't think that would happen. And there was a case of they tried to prosecute as a member of parliament simply for using that word, its Finnish equivalent. So once they lose their confidence, that's it. And they lost their confidence. I mean, my father had a good friend when he was at college who was Jamaican. Seems to run in the family, and he had a sports car, this guy, and he was constantly stopped. He was constantly stopped by the police. Like, he was sick to death of it. It's when they lose their confidence that you're, and that's what they're losing in Germany, is not being able to do that.
Yeah, but there's also the ethical side of it. It's treating people, you're basically patronizing a certain demographic, saying you're not to be expected to live up to the standards of everyone else, which is a terrible form of racism. Treat everyone the same.
Exactly. I was once, many years ago, about 2003 or four, at the Scottish Folk Festival at something in Glasgow. And there was this constant noise as I was trying to listen to Judy Fowlis or whatever it was. It was and I eventually said to some Scottish woman, I said, look, can you go and ask that chap to just him there, stop making stupid noises? It's very annoying. And she goes over and she comes back and she says, oh, he's a Mongol boy, she said. He's a Mongol boy. It would be such a shame to ask him to leave. And I said, okay, I suppose so. But it's like, it's that level of patronising, isn't it? But with foreigners, that they can't be expected. They can't be expected to play.
Shocked, Ed, that you didn't ask for the person to be removed. Knowing you as I do.
No, I did.
Yeah, but when you then got the extra information, I thought you were still insist.
I already knew she didn't.
Oh, I see.
My attitude was he was making noise. I was clear what he was. She didn't know. But yeah.
Someone said, would I have said the same? I'm more likely to be in the person making that type of noise.
Yeah. Well, only because you're really, really engrossed in Judy Fowlis or Gaelic language music. But
You people are losing your asabia.
Yes, we are. We've lost our asabia. It's not that we're losing it, Lipson. We have no asabia if we're prepared to allow people to misbehave in public like this and not buy things. And as it said in the film, it puts the prices up for everybody else. And it's,
but could we segue into Burnham on the back of this? Because yes, I can't believe more hasn't been made of Crackadilly Gardens. And how atrocious Manchester is, given he's supposed to have been the Messiah of the North. Just visually, Crackadilly Gardens is absolutely atrocious.
Well, there's some stories as well about these. Well, apart from the fact of his wife being a main director of Octopus Energy, who was the one who got the contract for millions of pounds for his trams or buses, there's that story. But there's also the story of all these new high-rise flats, which some developer ended up making something like £800 million over a few years whilst Burnham was there on the back of some of these. So there are two sort of really, that's three really nasty stories, as well, of course, as the rape gangs, which he was pretty much in charge of ignoring.
Yes, I don't know. I mean, Boris was regarded to have done various things for London. I don't know what exactly. Was it night buses or was that Ken? I can't remember.
The Boris wave, he did that?
No, but when he was mayor of London.
I'm joking.
Yeah, sure. But he was dreadful. He was crap and he was appalling. But where, and I hope that at his European Union dinner that he spoke at in Arc, only one third of people turned up. As it was in central London, so central line. But I think that he did various things that people regarded as positive apropos London. But I can't think of anything in relation to Manchester. I've been to Manchester about three times. And on every on one of those times, I'm pretty sure Burnham was mayor of it. And on every single occasion, almost the first thing that's happened when I've got there is I've been offered drugs.
There's certainly people in Makerfield were talking positively about not having to pay charges to go into Manchester because of Dear Andy.
Well, that's the irony. You get a free bus journey to Crackadilly Gardens. What more could anyone who lives in the North want? But my point remains, how can this not be? Visually, Crackadilly Gardens is atrocious. How can this not be more of a story when people are saying that he did such a wonderful job? The evidence is visually in front of people. The it's not just Piccadilly Gardens; it's the main Arndale area. It looks absolutely. It's like a bomb's hit it. It's awful. I know a bomb did hit it in the past. It probably looked better then than it does now.
No, well, it's almost like people. The country is in such a terrible state that people want to believe that there is some kind of Scouse Messiah that will come.
Well, we all know that's me.
Well, yeah, well, but like a person that's sent by God rather than Satan, some kind of Scouse Messiah that will come and rescue them from the craziness at the moment, and they're prepared to believe that Burnham is that person, and it's almost like they feel that, you know, Labour is their identity, and it's not that there's a problem inherent with the Labour Party, it's that Labour has been, which is a good thing, has been led astray by bad people like Keir Starmer or whatever, and if only good people could run Labour, then everything will be okay. I think I don't know who gave that idea to me the other day, but it's not my idea. Somebody else said this.
It made sense.
Yeah, it did. Thank you. But this explains why these people would vote for Brexit and whatever in large numbers, and then vote for him. But it just seems he's just as bad as everybody else. He wants heavily taxed people. He's pro transsexualism. He's obviously a terrible man.
Can we beat her now? She should win.
Yeah, but she won't.
She will.
I don't think she will.
Kemi Badenoch?
Yes.
Why would she win, Lipton?
Because she's seen as more serious than their contenders.
You're talking about Nigel, though. That's only one contender.
Andy Burnham doesn't impress me. Sorry.
He's got very dark hair, hasn't he? For an Englishman. It's almost
maybe
like you
both buy Grecian 2000 together, Ed.
No, maybe he's Irish or something. I think he might be Irish. He's Catholic. He's Catholic, he is.
Got a bit
well,
of
he,
said,
he says he is. He says he is, but he's not really.
Or is he really?
So he won't do anything about abortion. So I don't really see how you can claim to be Catholic and just let abortion occur left, right and centre and in the same party that you're part of. So he's a Catholic of convenience.
He's a Sunday Catholic, but not even.
I don't even think he goes to mass regularly. But again, so to say, I'm as much of the Catholic as he is, probably more, and that's not very much.
No, well, that's the thing.
But again, Catholic. He hasn't been held up. Where is the journalist who said to him, Andy, well, what are your views on abortion?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. I like the way that Steve Edgington said to Liz Truss, so you say that you're a social conservative, and she said, yeah. And he said, you once said you were the best friend of the LGBT. In what sense are you a social conservative? And, you know, and he didn't say this, but he could have added, and also you had an affair and cuckolded your husband.
Liz Truss. Yes, that's
it always amazed me that Penny Mordaunt could have been something in the Conservative Party if she wasn't ridiculously woke.
Exactly.
I'd never understood if she had been a genuine Conservative. I think, you know, she would have been very appealing.
Mm. She certainly could look good in a swimming costume.
Exactly,
like quite wide maternal hips. although, ironically, as I understand it, she's a spinster, so she's never actually pushed anything
is
out.
Is she?
Yes. She's a spinster. She is. Yeah. She's never actually pushed something the size of a melon out of those bad boys. But if she wanted to, then she wouldn't have died in childbirth like in the old days. You know, there wouldn't have to be any obstetrics involved. It would have been. She'd have been fine. Lipton.
She'd have been back at the dispatch box.
I don't have dogs.
She'd have been back down the dispatch box the same day, as used to happen on the farms. You know, these women, they would give birth in the morning and they would be back in the fields, whatever they were doing, cutting the corn or something.
If you had to give birth, Ed, how long do you think it would take you?
Well, I have very, very, very narrow hips. And a vagina so small that you can barely see it. So I think there would definitely have to be obstetrics involved, or perhaps even
forceps delivery.
Cesarean. I mean, it would be violent. It would be violent. So no, I think it would be a long delivery. It would take a while.
No, I think most men would be very quick because there'd be football or darts on or something that they wouldn't want to miss.
Yes, I would like to add that, actually. I was watching darts the other day, and darts is good because the equivalent of a goal, you know, everyone goes like, yeah, is scoring a 180. And in high-level darts, that happens quite a lot.
Mm.
So there's quite a lot of goals and there's quite a lot of excitement.
Well, they've done studies on the rhythm of the game. So there's something like there's peak excitement every 30 seconds or so. And then there's a crescendo after about oversharing here. Then there's a crescendo after about 3.5-4 minutes. And that makes a very good TV. This is for darts. This isn't my love life.
Football, yeah. You just wait and wait and wait and wait. Like this game I was watching the other day, England versus Panama or something. And it goes on, and there's no goal, and nothing happens. And then eventually there's a goal. And everyone's like, yeah, but wouldn't it be better if they made the goals considerably bigger?
That's the beauty, and it's even more true in cricket. It's the lack of action. It's like fishing. When the action eventually happens, it's orgasmic, whereas American sports are far too... It's like basketball is only interesting in the last 2 minutes of a game if it's close, because otherwise it's just end-to-end dunking. It's boring as hell.
With darts, the orgasmic is when it's a 9-darter. That's the orgasmic. That's where it's, people.
No, but that's simplifying it. There's also you have to finish a game off.
Yeah. With the doubles. Yeah.
Yeah. No point getting. You could get a 9-darter and lose the match. What's the point of that apart from the payoff?
That is true. There is a payoff. Yeah. I forget how much they get per 9-darter, but they do get something. That is true. But no, I do think they could make. Or another idea I had is, you know how England always loses on penalties. There's always shit at penalties. Well, I had this dog, Chipper. He was a Springer Spaniel. And when you threw a ball for him, he would always catch it in his mouth.
Like he so had we want a Springer Spaniel in goal.
Springer Spaniels in goal. Yeah, both ends. Obviously, you'd have to make the ball a little bit smaller so they could catch it in their mouths.
Well, I've always had staffies and they would attack the ball on the penalty spot and you wouldn't be able to take the penalty. That's even better. You've got no chance of scoring.
So we can agree then that there should be Springer Spaniels in goal and maybe like a cat in midfield or something. Because they're pretty pointless, they don't do anything, midfielders. So, all right, we've gone off topic a little bit, but yeah, I do think that this is what have we got here? This song.
What about the Anthony just for Lipton? What about the Anthony Carmelo thing and the View? What's Lipton, that, Lipton? You normally have a lot to say about the View.
I don't look. I think the View is for silly woman, and it should be retired so I can become the host. Simple.
Yeah, but did you see the recent controversy over the Anthony Carmelo story?
That is a black guy got a scholarship?
No, the black guy killed the white guy. And
the woman on The View
tried to defend the black guy.
No, I don't watch The View any at all. I only read headlines that paint them as idiots. I don't watch it.
You don't actually watch the idiocy in action?
No.
Oh. It's a bit like this Monday night session with a lot more glamour.
We are very glamorous here. Speaking of glamour, it's very sad to announce that Penelope Keith has died.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
I think that's... I ran into her once at Waterloo Station and congratulated her on her brilliance. She's very tall.
Yes.
Must have been about 6 foot, honestly. Yeah. I'm back on it now. It was about 20 years ago I met her. She must have been about 6 foot. And I thought this, and this was from this time when comedies were funny and weren't.
She made me very confused as an adolescent because I couldn't work out Margot or Felicity Kendall.
Well, I would have thought, I mean, you know, God rest her soul and all that, but I would have thought that Felicity Kendall was prettier.
Yes, but there was something about Margot.
Well, the sort of starchy.
And just the impression with a riding crop, what she could do to you.
Yeah. I can see.
You never got that from Felicity Kendall. No, do you have a view on this, Catherine? These male fantasies from the 1970s.
No, but it was just very sweet. I mean, it was.
Well, we just ruined it by making it perverted.
Yeah,
that's Ed's fault.
I mean, she was already 35 when they were making The Good Life, so she didn't become famous till middle age, essentially.
But The Good Life was just innocence, wasn't it? I mean, it was the end of innocence. Can you imagine The Good Life now with the crack addicts down the road and somebody squatting and having a shit at the end of your garden?
this is true. If it was now,
Catherine, you should have been a TV critic for the Telegraph.
The council would have been straight round to shut that farm down. if this was
well, it would be a crack anyway. Now they wouldn't be growing cabbages.
No, and people like that wouldn't be able.
Sorry,
to
afford, hashish, yeah, cannabis. Yeah.
And they wouldn't be able to afford to live in a large house in Surbiton. There's actually a scene in The Good Life, I remember, where they talk about saving up for 2 years and buying that house.
No, I'm just expanding on this theme. We could have illegals and have them up in the attic.
Yeah, maybe. No, you could have a HMO next door.
You could make yours into Margo. The HMO. Yours will be, and then you have one room for the cannabis farm, and then you'll have some huts down the end where you've got some more of Mahmood's sponsored people.
No, it would be hell now. It would be, I'm sure Surbiton itself is appalling these days. I've not been there for many years, but I'm sure it's fallen into a terrible state of disrepair. And all the shops have become vape shops.
Tunbridge Wells, which used to be really nice, is just an absolute terrible. Well, okay.
It must have happened quickly, Catherine, because I last went to Tunbridge Wells in 2018.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's on YouTube. It's on X today. I mean, guys standing in corners, taxi drivers, Afghans everywhere. I had to pick up somebody, and I got the picture because I've got a friend complaining about it all the time. But it's basically the Boris wave, the Jenneric wave have seemed to have descended.
So disgusted from Tunbridge Wells has become a real thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it was nice when I went there in 2018 and they had an antique bookshop with a first edition of Mein Kampf behind a glass box and all kinds of stuff. I have a friend from university whose husband was the vicar of one of the churches in Tunbridge Wells, St. Mark's Church. And I went down there, but this is 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was very, very nice. So in 8 years, they've wrecked it.
Yeah.
So you went from the bookshop with Mein Kampf to go and see the vicar.
Yes. Well, no, the vicar took me to the bookshop. He's very much into World War II history and he wanted to show me.
Oh, I see.
Large collection of World War II related books in the bookshop.
Goose stepped down the high street together.
Well, he was wearing black anyway, so I suppose he could have passed as a black shirt. And it was absolutely fine. But so now Tunbridge Wells is ruined. I hear Margate is completely ruined.
Yeah.
And there was some near riot there the other day at the railway station, composed of a certain element. South End, likewise.
Well, worse than that, have you seen the footage of the countryside where I think there was a beauty spot in the north of England that was in a Bollywood film and then it just became a focal point for people visiting and it's out of control tourism.
I hear the same things happen in Lake Windermere.
Yeah, I think that might have been it.
So Lake Windermere is not a calm place to go.
Yeah.
As it was when I went there in the year 2000. It is the change is so rapid, and normally you would expect there to be some kind of massive reaction and people becoming absolutely furious.
Yeah, but what suppose... do people do? People are absolutely furious, but they don't know what to do. I mean, they are furious, but then they go and, you know, some of them have a riot and then they all get arrested. And then what do other people do? Well, I mean, they have protests every weekend over this and that and the other outside migrant hotels, and people are furious, absolutely furious. So what do
Catherine,
they
ask? Could I ask you a question, though, a very specific question, but then what happens with the right? The right of centre is increasingly splitting. So in terms of practically doing something about it and changing the government, how is that going to work out?
I don't know. And it's really dreadful. I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I do get the feeling, and I still get the feeling that if Nigel disappeared for some reason then, or retired or went off to earn £250,000 for a speech in Florida, I was actually, I don't know who it was on the Labour side, somebody really left-wing, but they were putting through a bill to stop MPs having second jobs because Nigel earns £1 million without his £5 million. But if he did disappear, then I think that would help things an awful lot, because I think that I think Restore and the Conservatives might be able to do something together. But both Restore and the Conservatives detest Nigel. Kemi and Nigel hate each other as well. So it's dreadful. I mean, I don't know what to do about it. I have no idea.
There was an article in the Telegraph only today arguing that so the right attacks the far right. That's another problem. So there was an article in the Telegraph only today, or was it yesterday, arguing that far right people are exploiting something, it's actually called using it, but exploiting something called buy me a coffee.
Yeah.
In order to get money. And one of the people that we that was pictured was a girl that we both met. It was a friend of mine.
Connor Tomlinson was in it as well.
Was he in it?
Yes, he was lower down. They had him too, as well as Lucy White.
As I regard them, I regard Connor as much more left-wing than me. And although he's growing up, bless him, and he's realising that I'm right. But it's ridiculous. Extreme and then right. At the same conference, we had various Telegraph journalists. In fact, we went for a drink, me and Lucy, with a Telegraph journalist. He's a good guy, to be fair. But yet the Telegraph are then attacking her. I mean, it's so unnecessary to have splits among us. But yet we have to have this, apparently. And the left are splitters as well, famously. But it just seems that
That's what I just find surprising. The right don't seem to have, having spent decades criticising the left, they're just replicating their behaviour. The ideological purity on the right's just as strong as on the left.
Well, it is, yeah. So when we have someone, as we discussed earlier on this show, saying, Lipton should go back to his own country. And I regard this as just so unnecessary and pointless. To why? What do you get out of that? You know,
exactly. Like Paul, that person with on the show. What is his name? Morgott.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to the event in London with Ed, and people were talking about Morgott, and they were saying, "Ignore Morgott. He's just a fat guy." Yeah, people are really upset, Ed.
I don't want to personalize it, but I just think it's just so unnecessary. I was at this event, Momus, that's been on here. Yes. I told you this story before, and how we were at this event in this dinner in London, and it was me, this barrister, this girl that's a right wing activist, and Momus, and this woman, and she just looked at me, having looked at Momus, went, "Who the fuck is that?" And I said, "It's a friend of mine, Momus," and she just got up and walked out because he was coloured. And this guy, this barrister, said to me he knew John Tyndall, and he said if John Tyndall had been here, he wouldn't have done that. He would have wanted him to get out of the country, but he would have been polite to him one on one.
In my opinion, is what real racism is. It's not what the left call racism. Which is, you know, this is a sort of mass identitarian. It's literally just picking on me because I'm a woman, or picking on Lipton because he's black, or picking on somebody because they're fat. I mean, it's just pure, nastiness.
Yeah, but it's worse than that, because I tried to make the hype, and this is, people lose their minds when you try and make a hypothetical argument because you're using clever words, which of course it's better to use stupid ones. But I made the point you could have a very ethnically diverse British political cabinet who, as Sean, what's her name, Mahmood is doing, is actually serious about immigration reform. Or you could have an all-white, wokey, yeah, suicidally empathetic cabinet who do nothing and make immigration worse. And because of ideological purity, they actually say, "I'd prefer the all-white cabinet."
Yeah.
Well, so they're actually not bothered about outcomes. It's virtue signalling on the right wing that's just as bad, if not worse, than left-wing virtue signalling. No one seems interested in actual outcomes anymore.
No, I agree with you. It's purity signalling.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that purity signalling, if you keep at it, you get someone that just says, "Oh, the Jew, why didn't you..."
Well, yeah, there's virtue signalling and there's bigotry signalling, and they're just the absolute mirror image of each other.
I'm more
bigoted than you, and I'll prove it by saying something ridiculous. And I don't care what the outcome is, because I am guarding my bigotry.
I'll prove it by espousing an utterly impractical policy.
Yeah.
Like that we should deport everybody that's come to Britain since 1948 immediately. And not take into account the civil war that would start, and that therefore if you want to do that, you have to do it very slowly and carefully and cautiously, and you certainly can't go around saying you're going to do it. But no, it gets into this impractical kind of signaling, and then you just get these little groups on the right, that pat themselves on the back and say how pure and virtuous they are, but they can't get anything done. And the same kind of people that when Nick Griffin was reforming the BNP, stormed out of the BNP saying, "No, you know, you're betraying the principles of Hitler. We can't be involved with this party anymore." And Nick Griffin was saying, "Well, I'm trying to be practical here and get councillors elected." Well, "Oh no, you can't do that." You know, it's I don't even think it's that difficult. But then it's fair. Then some people argue that, "Oh well, we're trying to be practical here, Ed. Yes, we agree with you, but we can't have you on our show yet. Not yet. Maybe in a few years' time, and things have moved your way, but not yet." So they're just even more cautious. So, and then eventually you get so cautious that you get people that I won't name them, but people that have been cabinet members that I've spoken to and agree in private with the kind of things that we or Catherine might think, but don't say anything in public. God, no, never. So where do you get that purity, practicality balance right? Because I would say they got it wrong with the Conservative Party because they just made things worse, didn't they? So they definitely got it wrong.
They stopped being conservative in any meaningful sense. That was my point about Penny Mordaunt. She became an ally for the LGBTQ plus double spirit, I wake up on a Friday, don't know what gender I am type people. And there was no need for that. It's this wanton.
Even people like Sarah Poachin, before she joined Reform, was at Migrants Welcome, Illegal Migrants Welcome, and LGBT, whatever, you know, gay rights activism things. I mean, I've never thought these things. So it wasn't sort of like I have to do a shift.
Yeah, but Catherine, you can forgive people for having a change of mind,
maybe
having a sea change in their opinions and then moving to a different party. But my point would be, if you're in the Conservative Party holding no Conservative opinions, what are you doing in that party? Or how did the party allow itself to become a party of non-Conservative people? Simple. Don't decaffeinate a product.
No, never decaffeinate anything.
No, it's an abomination to caffeinated coffee.
Literally don't. My mum buys decaffeinated Pepsi. What's the point of that? I didn't know that, Catherine. I didn't know that with regard to this poaching woman. I didn't know that. That makes me suspicious.
Yeah, but, you know, she. I mean, I think she has had, maybe she has had a change. I mean, I accept that people have, because the situation has become so much more difficult. But it's sort of, there are things. And she was a politician, so I suppose, you know, it was just convenient to do some of these things. But still, when she was, before she was elected, everybody was looking at this stuff and saying, well, that's not very conservative, especially, you know, illegals welcome here, refugees welcome here, effectively.
I'm happy to welcome genuine refugees. There just aren't many of them.
I don't think there are any, because I'll tell you why I don't think there are any. And I know somebody who was in UKIP who was Eritrean. And I said, how are you in UKIP? What are you doing in UKIP? And he said, I'm here because I work in the Home Office on these applications and every single person is lying. And my other point about why I don't think there are refugees, and the Barnabas Trust did this in Syria, did a lot of work on this, and I've done it in Nepal. The reason why there aren't any genuine refugees is if you're in Sudan and you're getting, or Syria, and you are getting your head chopped off and murdered, you don't get out. There are none, because only the murderers get out. And if I'm in Nepal, even if I was being prosecuted, I live in a village. I used to run a healthcare charity. My healthcare workers had never been to the capital city. So they're not going to, the real people who might have been, there isn't particularly torture in Nepal, but supposing there was, they wouldn't have been to the capital city. They don't have the fare for the bus. They don't speak English. They don't know how to access anything. Every single refugee, supposed now, has access to lots of things to get here. And they
But Catherine, don't you think it's even much more simple than that? I'm sorry, it's such a cliche, but it's an obvious point. If you're coming here from France, you are not a refugee. Simple.
Yeah.
And how that gets past any further discussion is beyond me.
Yes.
You cannot be a genuine asylum seeker if you're in a safe country. There's no war in France.
Well, that's one point. But then if you had Syria, when there were the Syrian, they were taking people out of camps.
Yeah, but yeah, I understand that. But that...
they were taking the killers out of the camp.
Yeah, Lipton's dog is barking. That's the answer.
Look, Catherine, yes. I have observed that many of these refugees or asylum seekers, whatever you wish to call them, they come to the UK and then they return home for a vacation.
Yeah.
End of story.
Exactly. If you go to Somalia on vacation, then how are you fleeing Somalia?
Sorry to interrupt that, but it's just fresh in my mind that alibi, what's her name? Brown, that she's like professionally annoying.
Yeah. Yes.
In a discussion, someone made the point I just made about the French. Yeah, if you're leaving France, you are not an asylum seeker. And then she said, but it's their human rights because they have family and friends in the UK. But if they already have family and friends in the UK, again, how's that? That is not an asylum seeker. That's an arrangement that seems to be convenient for economic and family reasons. That's not because of political asylum seeking. But they say these things, and no one in the mainstream media ever challenges them on the absolute basics of the logic of their argument.
You go to the next safe country, the next country in which there isn't a war. The whole point of asylum, you go somewhere, so you don't pick and choose where you can go. I'm in Finland. If war breaks out in Finland, I can either go back to England, of which I'm a citizen, or I can go to the nearest safe country, and the nearest safe country to me is Sweden. And that's where I would go.
Except it's no longer safe.
All right, so then I would go to Russia. I would go to Russia. Unfortunately, Mr. Putin has declared that if you want to flee liberal values, then apparently you can come to Russia and be sent to
I think Stockholm makes Manchester look like the Garden of Eden at the moment.
It depends where in Stockholm. Is it Rinkeby? Is that the name of the place? It's tragic. And even somewhere like Uppsala. I almost went to Uppsala University for my PhD. Like, I looked into this years ago and it was recommended to me. That's why I should go. And
is that beautiful? Because you like saying it so much?
Yeah, Uppsala. It's nice. It sounds nice. Uppsala. Or Uppsala. It sounds like
if you keep doing that, Ed, you're going to give yourself a hernia.
I'm not. Uppsala. But anyway, I didn't go there. I went to Leiden instead. But the point is that it sounds beautiful, but apparently it's awful. And there was a case of this girl that was, what was she? She was prosecuted for carrying a pepper spray or something in Uppsala because she was concerned about being raped. And this teenage girl was prosecuted for that. Because that's not allowed.
Can I just ask, where does Lipton go when he sort of disappears and all this stuff?
Oh, I'm right here.
You should sing that, Catherine. Where do you go to, my friend?
He's like that character in the Moomins episode where there's that girl in the Moomins when she's shy and she disappears. Lipton's like that. When he gets Catherine's buggered off. When he gets shy, he disappears.
That should be the channel's little ditty, Ed. Where do you go to, my lovely? We should all sing it to Lipton every week.
Where's all the Liptons gone? Long time passing. Where have all the Liptons gone? Long time ago.
I love a good Welsh song.
Girls have picked him, everyone. Where will we ever learn? When will they ever learn? Where have all the Catherines gone?
Hello, I'm back.
Hello, yeah, you went off there. Your internet went off.
Yeah, I know. Just as I said it, then my power went out. Sorry.
Yes, a power outage. That actually happened at my parents' house while I was there as well. So there's all kinds of malarkey going. Power outages. That's never happened here. The lightning the other day, frankly.
Very frightening.
Do you have siblings? Or are you an only child?
I'm an only child.
I could guess that.
Okay.
You exude only childness.
Two sisters.
Younger or older?
I'm older.
You're the big bro, are you, Lipton, that they look up to?
That's the 1 year and 10 year old in their 20s now, though. Yeah, they're big.
Yeah. I didn't think. Yeah, fair enough. No. Well, I'm born 3 months early, you see, so it wouldn't have been a good idea for them to have other children because they were born early and were more spastic than me. So no, I am an only child. Paul is one of about 10, aren't you, Paul? Because you're Catholic.
No, I'm the third of four.
The third of four of that round. But then, then they had a break because your dad was knackered, got his mojo back. Another five or six. You know, that's how it works with these Catholics, isn't it? We all know that. Right, I better round up now. So I would like to thank once again Catherine for coming on. I think it's been most intellectually rigorous, and I would like to thank Lipton as well and Paul. And yes, and so yeah, it's. I hope it doesn't. The heatwave doesn't come to Finland this week, chaps, and I'm okay. But yes, all's well. Finishing the old Borderline book and all that. Tally ho, chaps. And see, I've got to promote in the middle. Buy our books. Yeah, Paul's books, Amazon. Lipton's books, for example, Busting African Delusions, Amazon. Catherine, do you have any books?
No.
No. Okay. Well, then, my brilliant book. Work Eugenics, How Social Justice Masks Social Darwinism, and my Bowden biography. All right, tally-ho, chaps, and see you all next week, and goodbye!
Goodbye!
Bye!
Bye, Catherine.